welcome to episode 27 of Unapologetically Overcoming. I'm your host, Jess Marie. Have you ever considered changing careers? Maybe you're just starting out in your career and have realized it's not for you. Or maybe you've been doing your job for many years and are ready for a change. What's holding you back? My guest today is here to talk about the stigmas related to changing, whether it be your mind, your goals, or your career. Listen in for some great tips on changing and how to tune out the outside voices that can often interfere. All right, my guest today is here to talk about a topic that's not quite as heavy as previous topics, but it is one that still has some stigmas attached to it. So I definitely think it's an important conversation to have. I'm very excited to welcome my guest. I'm going to let him introduce himself and let you all know a little bit about who he is and what he does. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
All right. So I'm, go ahead.
I'll introduce myself. So I'm Josh Peck. I'm a midlife career change coach. So I help people really who've spent 20 years in one career, but who know that it's not for them anymore, but they don't know what it is they want to do next. I help them work out what that next thing is and really what the thing is that enables them to be the kind of fullest version of themselves, the kind of unedited version of themselves. It gives them the fulfillment, the balance, the kind of financial freedom that they've been missing in their lives. And so I help them work out what that is and then make it happen.
Awesome. How long have you been a career change coach?
Oh, this is my second career. So I did a corporate job for 20 years and then hit the wall of, oh God, this isn't what I wanted to do, but I don't know, you know, I went through the same process myself. And then I've been doing this 5 or 6 years now.
Okay, awesome. So can you talk a little bit about your journey from going from having a job in the corporate world to switching to becoming a career change coach?
Sure, yeah. So I was really lucky. I would say I was probably one of the small number of people who actually was always really clear about what I wanted to do. Most people I speak to say, I kind of fell into my career. You know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do out of university, out of college. So fell into it. But I was really clear. I had always loved politics. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, I grew up in the 80s. There were lots of big protests and I had very politically active parents, you know, against all sorts of things. And so I grew up very politically active, very politically interested. And so I studied politics at university. I was, you know, politically active at university, and I went and then worked for politicians in Parliament, in the UK Parliament, mm-hmm. In London, where I live, when I graduated. And then from there went into a kind of string of, you know, I was a corporate lobbyist, basically a very nice one in the UK lobby. Lobbying's a very genteel occupation. And I was also in my spare time a local councillor, what I think you call a local councilman. So I did that for 12 years as well. And I really kind of lived and breathed politics and got a lot of enjoyment out of it and a huge amount of fulfillment out of it. I felt like I was changing the world for the better in a way that was meaningful for me. But really, over time, I changed and that career didn't change with me. And that's what happens, you know, what I see all the time, that the thing that is great for us, or even that we've fallen into in our 20s, you know, that stays broadly the same. And we change, you know, through births, deaths, marriages, pandemics, all that kind of stuff. We change really fundamentally as people. And so what kind of has worked for us in the past doesn't necessarily work going forward. And, you know, my 20s, I've been really motivated by doing well, getting on well, being successful. And in my 30s, I'd, you know, started to enjoy the benefits of that and having a bit more money, but was able to met my husband. We'd bought our house, and then, you know, in my late 30s or mid 30s, we adopted our first daughter. And then really the kind of challenge of balancing family life, I thought was quite an intense career. And, you know, I'd be doing the corporate job during the day and then going out and doing the kind of local politics in the evening, sitting in kind of planning committees and all of that stuff. And really the two kind of parts of me, the kind of professional me and the kind of home life me, started to come apart at that point. And, you know, it started to become less rewarding. The balance started to not work for me at all. And really, I think the nagging feeling, which grew louder and louder and less possible to ignore, and this is the thing that I see in all of the clients I work with, was really the sense of I wasn't any longer being authentically me in work. I was having to be this kind of constructed work persona. And you know, that was tough because I had always thought politics was what I would do for the whole of my career. I thought I would go on to be a full-time professional politician. That had been very motivating for me for a long time. You know, it was good in terms of you got to change the world, but it was pretty toxic as well. And you know, politics can be toxic, but also what I found for me was it brought out a real competitiveness, a real kind of control freakery in me. And when everything is a battle, if you're, you know, I would get into those battles and be like, "Oh, I need to win this one," and that wasn't healthy for me. It didn't bring out the best in me. And so I had this nagging sense of, "Well, is this for me? Is this not?" And that really was a good few years of that. And then I was on a plane one evening. We'd been to Hong Kong for a family to visit some family friends. I was coming back. It was a midnight flight. I was trying to get myself back onto UK time by staying awake. My husband and daughter were asleep next to me, and I ended up watching a film to stay awake. And it was the Amy Winehouse documentary, which starts with this beautiful home footage of her kind of mucking around as a kid at home. And over the top, there's the voiceover comes on and talks about how her dad started to have a long affair when she was about this age, and he was out every night as a result. And she responded by saying, "Well, if you're not going to be around for me, then I'm going to do what I want." And there started the disordered eating and the alcoholism that ended up killing her. And right then, my kind of blood ran cold, and I realized that I wasn't making this work for me. I wasn't making it work for my family. I wasn't being who I wanted to be. And at that point, then the risk of staying in my current career became greater than the risk of moving. And from the kind of die was cast, really. I didn't know then, and it would take me another couple of years to work out what it was that I wanted to do. But that was the point when I realized I had to step into being who I wanted to be.
That's such an important realization because I think sometimes people hear those thoughts in their heads and they just kind of ignore them because they think, it's too late to change or it's too hard to change or, all sorts of different reasons why they have to kind of stay stuck almost where they are. So as a career coach, what exactly do you do with the people that you're working with?
Yeah, well, it's a great question because there's a bit of a twin track process, and it talks to the point you've just made, really, which is there's a huge amount of fear. You know, a lot of people will come to me having thought about this for a really long time. I did a class earlier on in the week with about 50 or 60 people, and I asked them to tell me how long they've been thinking about a career change. And for most people, there were very few people who it wasn't at least a year. But the longest in there was 13 and 15 years. People think about this for a
Wow,
long,
that is a
long.
really long time.
Yeah, it's a long time to be thinking I'm not doing the thing I want to do. And it's partly because they don't know what it is they want to do. But there's a subtler but much more powerful thing, which is a lot of people end up doing the career, working in the career that they're in, because of the expectations of other people, because of the expectations of their parents, because of the expectations of the people around them. Because, you know, at the point when they start out their career, and they're kind of really, we start our careers in our mid-teens when we start to narrow down the subjects we study at school and then choose what we study at a university or college. And then, you know, what we go, you know, we get into this funnel in kind of 13 or 14, really. And well, you know, how on earth are we supposed to know what we're going to do? So we're very guided by other people's view of what we should do, by other people's view of what success looks like, by other people's views of what's permissible, what's acceptable, what's safe. And so the thing that really holds people back is at the point when you decide you want to change career and do something that's much more worthwhile, much more fulfilling, much more meaningful for you, which is at the heart of this. Fulfillment is really the heart of this. Balance and kind of lifestyle is very important, and financial freedom as well. But for most people who are driving, you know, they want to be values led. They want to be doing something that's making a difference. But the big thing is the need to break out from how other people see them and how other people conceive of them as being okay. And that's really frightening for people. And there's a lot of stigma about that, because it's about people stepping out the safety of an established job, the safety of an established salary. People often want to step out of something that's quite corporate into something that's much more about being creative, working with human beings in a much more immediate way. You know, the common expression I hear from almost everyone I speak to is, "I want to help people. I want to make a difference." And the people around them look on that with a bit of dismissal, a bit of concern. And so, you know, really that's the big thing. Working out what you want to do if you're free of that, it gets to be really easy. Getting yourself comfortable and then free of that is the bigger thing.
You made such a good point when you mentioned like being 13 or 14 and being asked like what do you want to do? Because that it made me think of like my son is 14 and when he was making the transition from middle school to high school, you have to pick your classes and kind of try to start narrowing down like which direction you want to go in. And that's hard. I mean, some kids can obviously blurt out, oh, I want to do this or I want to do that. But like, I'm even thinking back to when I was getting ready to, like start applying for colleges and stuff. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And like, I didn't know where I wanted to go to school. And there's so much pressure from outside of like, you have to pick a school, you have to pick a career, you have to do this, you have to do that. So I think it's instilled in us all at such a young age that by the time we get to the point in our lives where we realize like we don't have to do those things, some of us think, well, it's too late now. Like I've been doing this for all of these years. I might as well just stick with it, even if it's, not fulfilling to them or it's making them miserable and all of those things. So it's such an important point.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is it comes with so many layers of kind of belief with it. Because, even what our belief about what success looks like, your belief about what the right path is, there's this very strong, you must go to university, you must go to college, success is a steady income, success is seniority, all of those things are simply beliefs and they work really well for some people and they don't work so well for other people. And so, we're funneled into this belief system before we really have the ability to think about it. And I was really lucky. I was really, really lucky that I had something that I was really passionate about. I really, really loved politics. And so I was able just to kind of follow that passion and it turned into a really great career for me until, until that period was done. But I think a lot of people are kind of told that they need to follow what they're good at, not necessarily what they enjoy, and then, but a career is a balance of it's a balance of three. For me, it's always about three non-negotiables: that fulfillment, that the balance, the financial freedom, and actually the things that sit behind that is who are you as a human being? What is it that what is it going to meet that need for fulfillment? What matters to you? But then it's also, what are you really good at? What are you able to do that brings incredible value to the world? And then the third one is, what's your vision of a great life? And once you get all of those three in place, I work with people at midlife. So, that's less an age and more a kind of frame of mind. It's the point where you kind of think, you know what, this is difficult, but I'm not prepared to compromise anymore. That for me is midlife is often the point where you have so many responsibilities that's even more difficult. But you're like, I'm done settling. But actually, when you do that work, occasionally I work with people who are much younger. Actually, when you do that work with people right at the beginning of their careers, then that transforms their careers right the way through. I remember I was in a pub recently with someone who said, "Oh, don't you have to make people be realistic and kind of disabuse them of their kind of wildest dreams? Every kid wants to be a footballer or an Instagrammer or an influencer." And I said, "Well, actually, what I have to do with people is I have to get them when they're at midlife to find their dreams again, because the trouble at midlife is not that they're big dreamers, it's that they're desperately practical. Then they're like, oh, well, I'm not going to do anything, I couldn't make that work, so I'll just try this small thing." And actually what young kids have is they have the dreams. They don't necessarily have the framework to work out how, whether or not they have the skills and ability to put that together. But the strongest thing you will have in a career change is a big sense of dream, of ambition, of just being able to believe that you can do it, which is what many kids have. But when you're in midlife, you've been ground down so much, you're like, well, maybe if I'll just make it safe by keeping my ambition small. And that never works. Who wants to go through a career change for something small and unexciting? So one of my biggest jobs is to let people dream again and really kind of find their excitement.
I love that though, because like you said, I mean, so many times when you do ask like small children what they want to do, it's something that like we're like, oh, you think to yourself, like, well, you could never do that, but they really believe that they can. So it's so important to kind of reinforce that thought throughout not just like childhood, but because you like you really can do any like if you really want to do something and you put your mind to it and you take the proper, the proper steps, you can absolutely do anything, even if it sounds like the craziest idea in the world.
Exactly. Well, look at anyone who's done anything incredible, president, astronauts, whatever, they've done that thing. And there's a really tough thing, which is that, yeah, of course, not all of us can be nuclear scientists. Not all of us have the capability to do particular things. But I worked with a woman recently who she'd had a great career, actually, but she'd had a few knocks, she'd had a few bumps, she'd been made redundant, she had a difficult couple of years, and her confidence was really rock, on the bottom, on the floor. And we did quite a short session together, and we just kind of got her back in touch with actually what she had done, what she knew about herself and her kind of sense of self-belief. And at the end of the session, I thought, oh, not sure what she's got out of this. And then a couple of weeks later, she sent me an email to say, I just wanted to know that that session kicked off this spiral of rising confidence that has just grown and grown and grown. And she talked about all different kind of side benefits about that. She was eating better and she was exercising more regularly. And her relationships had improved. And then at the end of the email, she said, and I've just put in an incredible application to be an astronaut. And I laughed at that. So the European Space Agency had got this open call for its astronauts program. It was looking to diversify. And this woman was actually incredible. She'd worked in the oil and gas industry, so she'd run teams out in like in kind of extreme environments. She'd done marathons and triathlons. She was incredibly kind of capable of it. So she'd built kit cars and so she had all of the skills, but she couldn't believe it in herself. She'd lost that belief. And when she got it back, she was like, no, I can be an astronaut. Now, she didn't get through to the next round, but one of the women who did had a very, very similar skill set to her. It really didn't matter. It was the fact that she believed she could do it. And then she went on to apply for a whole bunch of other stuff. And she's got a job recently that she's really loving. So, we really are limitless. The thing that limits us is not, what we can do, it's what we believe of ourselves.
And a lot of times I think that belief comes from outside of us. Like other people make us think and believe that we can't do things because they're not believing maybe that they can do them. So they're like projecting that out onto others, which, is essentially the reason why I started this podcast so that people can hear these stories and understand that you can do X, Y, and Z because, there are other people who have been where you are that are doing, those things that maybe you thought you couldn't do. So,
Yeah,
it's
it's a really
definitely.
interesting point. That our brains do a really interesting thing. They take decisions from what we know. So our brains want to keep us safe. The most powerful bit of our brain, the amygdala, is the kind of the bit that keeps us safe. And it keeps us safe by looking for risk. And the biggest risk is stuff it doesn't know. And so it faced with a decision between the thing we know and the thing we don't, the devil we do, the devil we don't, is always going to choose the thing we know, even if the thing we know is a situation that we don't enjoy, that we don't like, that doesn't feel great, that's maybe damaging us. So being able to surround yourself with people who are doing something different, who are showing your brain that actually it's possible, is really transformational. I've got a career change program that's actually a group program. And one of the reasons it's so successful is that actually people are in it and they see other people making a success of it. And that teaches your brain that it's possible. And so yeah, when you switch from people kind of looking at you as if you're crazy because you want to ch change something to being around people who are doing it and making a success of it, your brain goes, oh, this is possible for other people and therefore it's possible to me. So, who you surround yourself by, but with who the messages you take in, the amount of belief in yourself from other people is really, really crucial.
I think people don't realize how important that is, because it really does make a huge difference. So talking about that, what are some of the stigmas that you find? I know you probably touched on some of them, but related to people making career changes kind of later on in life.
I would say there's some about the career change and there's some about the thing that they want to the person that they want to be. So the ones about career change are, there's a lot of stigma about giving up success as people see it. So, I spoke to someone earlier in the week who said she'd been talking to her dad about the fact that she was doing this program with me, and he thought she was utterly crazy. She's got a good job, she's got a good salary. She's deeply unhappy, but that doesn't matter because She's ticked the boxes. She's got the steady salary.
Yep.
She's got the big office job and all that kind of stuff. So there's definitely a stigma around the fact that you want to give up. You should be lucky. You should be thankful. You should be grateful for what you have. And if you're giving that up on some kind of silly whim to chase some silly dream, then that's really questionable. So there's a big stigma around that, I think. There's also a sense of often when I coach with people around career change, as I say, what they want to step into is something that has a more immediate impact on other people. So they want to, they talk about it as, I want to help, I want to make a difference. And some people have a bit of a stigma about that, about, sounds a bit kind of wishy-washy, a bit airy-fairy, a bit do-gooding. And actually, the things that people go on to do are really broad and varied, and they make an incredible change to the world. I have my business plan is a one-line business plan. It's changing the lives of people who will go on to change lives. It is about making a difference in a way that's meaningful. Now, that can be a whole range of different things. It doesn't have to be, ending world hunger. It can be bringing beauty and joy to the world with the products you create and the events but doing something meaningful, some people really sneer at that, particularly if they don't feel that what they're doing is meaningful, particularly if they're stuck.
Yeah, definitely.
And the other stigma I would say is, what I often find is that people have put themselves on these narrow rails of a very professional, quite buttoned up career, very, very traditional, very corporate, because there was something about them in their teens they were a bit uncomfortable with. And so they've created this kind of professional persona as a bit of a front. And I did the same, growing up, I knew I was gay. I was kind of broadly comfortable with it, but there was obviously some shame there as well. And so the way I coped with that was by creating this very kind of professional, I wouldn't say hyper masculine, but certainly, it was very kind of, I'll be strong. I always wanted to be, good at everything I did. And people would say to me, "Oh, I find you really intimidating." I would always think, "Oh, great, job done."
Yes,
If I'm
I did
intimidated,
it.
yeah, exactly. And actually, whether it's sexuality, whether it's just being kind of comfortable in your own skin, with your body, and whatever it is, actually, midlife is the point where people get to the point of thinking, "Screw this. I'm fed up of trying to be someone for everyone else, and I actually just want to be myself." I coach a lot on imposter syndrome, and kind of general received wisdom on imposter syndrome is everyone feels it. It's just a natural thing. My view of imposter syndrome is generally imposter syndrome comes about because people actually aren't naturally that good at what they're doing, and they are worried about being found out, not because they're not good at something, but because they're in the wrong thing. They are, they're having to pretend to be something. They've often got very, I was good at my corporate career. Don't get me wrong, I was good at it, but it was a heavy lift. I had to be someone that I wasn't. I had to try hard. It didn't come naturally. The job I do now comes really naturally to me. It doesn't feel like a job. And so I have no imposter syndrome in this because I'm just being myself. Whereas so many people in the jobs that they come into, they have to try so hard to be that person, to do that thing, to have that set of skills which aren't natural, that they feel like an imposter because they're being an imposter. So, stepping into, okay, I'm just going to be myself, is kind of throwing off that stigma that of whatever they thought was wrong with them in the first place. Now, the trouble is they spend so long pretending to be someone, or kind of creating this construct of who they are. People say to me, "I don't know who I am anymore." And I always say to them, "You do, you just lost sight of it." And so the first thing we always do is we actually don't even talk about careers at the beginning. We just get people back in touch with who they are. And that's such a beautiful thing, because when you give people the time and the space and the process, the structure to actually work out what matters to them. What are my values? What are my beliefs? What am I passionate about? What am I motivated about? What am I actually good at? What are the things that I do really naturally that kind of bring great value? How do I want to live my life? What people do I enjoy being around? When you allow people to actually find their level on all of those things, their shoulders drop, they get the spring back in their step, and they're like, "Oh, all of those problems that I was worried about, they're not me. It's not that I'm broken, it's just that I'm in the wrong thing. And now I understand who I am." And a whole bunch of stuff starts to make sense. And it's the point where people, their relationships get better, their health gets better, all that kind of stuff, because finally they're back in touch with who they are. And so, they're able to We're probably our most powerful at this point in our lives. We're at that point of saying, you know what, I don't mind about what other people think of me. That kind of sense of, I'm too old to care anymore. I'm too old to care. Now, that's a lifelong process. It doesn't get to be that easy. It's a process, but certainly I think the tipping point comes. The traditional midlife crisis was the point where you're like, it was about kind of worrying about getting old. For me, actually, I call it a midlife moment, is more about the point when what's there for you isn't working anymore, and you're not going to compromise it anymore. You're like, no, life's too short. I'm going to make.
And that in itself is so powerful, and like you said, all those examples of the things that become better after you make that realization and then take the steps and make the changes. Like it's almost like a domino effect. And I know usually people think of that as like a bad thing, but flipping it and reframing it and looking at it that way, like that's an amazing thing because you make that change, which again is not easy and it doesn't happen overnight. But I think realizing the good that comes from that can make a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yeah, it is like a domino effect, but it's like things falling into place. When you kind of get to that sense of, I always say to people, a career change isn't about a job, it's about aligning who you are with what you do. And if you haven't been very conscious about your job in the first place, but even if you've just drifted, even if you've changed and your job hasn't, then you're in one place and your job's like way over there. And that gap between is the dissonance, that feeling of I'm in the wrong skin, is the dissonance. And so when you get really clear on who you are, that enables you to then align what you want to do. And it also enables you how to align, okay, this relationship doesn't feel right. Well, what? Okay, so I'm not living in line with my values. I'm not living in line with, so you're able to realign those things. Now, the thing that worries people is, I sometimes coach people who worry that if they start down their process, they're going to kind of burn the house down. They're going to find that they're so different that everything's going to fall apart. Actually, that generally what happens is they become much more able to deal with things as they are, much more kind of open. When they feel great in themselves, it enables them to be much more kind of compassionate and open and kind of creative in all of their relationships and all the things they do. But they do sometimes struggle with other people's response to it, particularly partners. It can be really scary for partners when you're going through this kind of great voyage of self-discovery and about career. Partners can get really freaked out about that. So my advice to people is always, just give them little bits as you go along, so it's not, something major at the end.
So kind of going off of what you just said a little bit, if there was one thing that you would want people to kind of take away from this interview and keep in mind about like changing your career, what would that be?
Oh, it's always so many. So many
It's
things.
hard sometimes to pick just one, but
Yeah, the thing I always come back to is that we imagine that we have to change for other people to like us, to accept us, to employ us, to buy our service, whatever. And I always say to people, look, there are 8 billion people in the world. Some of them are going to utterly loathe you. They're going to think you're awful. They're going to think you have no value. They're not your people. Some of those 8 billion people are going to think you're utterly fantastic. Your job is to find those people, because we imagine that we can make people like us, love us, find us more worthy. We imagine that we can make ourselves more worthy. If I'm just a bit clever, if I just kind of explain things a bit better, if I just do this training course, if I'm just a bit taller or thinner or dressed better, whatever, then maybe that person will like and love me. And when it comes down to it, we all want to be loved because that's how we stay safe and how we stay alive. But the truth is, we're born with the ability to be loved. We're always totally lovable. Whether or not someone likes us, loves us, has value in us, finds value, thinks we're valuable and worthwhile, is entirely in them. And you can never change another person. You are always entirely worthy. And so the kind of basis of all my coaching is kind of that radical self-acceptance of, I'm exactly as I need to be. And whether or not you like that or not, that's your business. I'm gonna show up as I want to show up. I'm gonna show up with integrity. I'm gonna show up doing my best. I'm gonna believe that you're doing the same. And if we love each other, great. If we don't, no one's lost. We'll move on. Just that kind of radical self-acceptance of, I don't need to change myself for anyone. If you get that, then that will enable you to do the most incredible things, career change and everything else, and importantly, to be happy in doing it. So I think that's the point I'd finish on.
I think that's the perfect takeaway from this interview. So I am really big on inspirational quotes and messages and all of that. Do you have a favorite quote or kind of inspirational message that resonates with you that you would might want to share with our listeners?
Oh, favorite inspiration. I tell you what I do love. I love Marie Folio. I love the Marie Folio quote, which is everything is figure outable. I say that to my girls all the time. I say, look, everything's figure outable. And really it is. You know, whatever you want to do, it's a series of steps. People could say, well, you know, this is my vision, but how am I going to achieve it? I'm like, well, everything's figure out, but it's a series of steps. When you stay desperately present, when you stay totally present in the present moment, when you know that there's only ever one thing that you can do, and when there's only ever what the next step, you know, how do you eat an elephant? Mouthful by mouthful, you know, that everything is figure outable. You can work out a way to everything. We get overwhelmed when we try and work out how we're, you know, if I said to you know, go and build a rocket to the moon, overwhelming. But the rocket to the moon is kind of one conversation, one step by step. And so everything is figure outable. As long as you remember that, then everything becomes possible.
I love that because it's 100% true. All right, so where can people find you as far as social media, websites, all that good stuff?
So I mainly hang out on Instagram and Facebook. On Instagram, I'm Your Best Life UK. My website is yourbestlifeuk.com. And yeah, I have a free Facebook group called How to Change Career, where there's a free training in there every week on all the kind of elements of changing career. I'd love people to come and join me there. But Your Best Life UK on Instagram is a good place to start.
All right, awesome. And I will link all of that information in the show notes for today's episode. Thank you again so much for joining me today. I really enjoyed this conversation. Like I said, it's a little lighter than some of the previous topics that I've had, but I definitely think there was a lot of important information in this episode. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
I loved this conversation so much because I think it's important to hear that changing is okay. There's absolutely no reason you should stay stuck somewhere you don't really want to be. Tune out the voices around you and the ones in your head and listen to this. Changing is powerful, and making decisions for yourself is empowering and liberating. So many of us stay stuck somewhere we don't want to be because it's been ingrained in us that we have to stay on whatever path we first chose. I'm here to tell you that we don't. I'd like to thank Josh again for joining me today. All of his information is linked in the show notes for today's episode. Thank you all for listening, and remember, be kind to yourselves, be kind to each other, and be unapologetically you.